This is sort of a sequel to Lewis's talk. So Lewis talked about periodic graphs, graphs of rotational symmetry, graphs of some kinds of crystallographic symmetry, and the question is, which of these frameworks are generically rigid in the context of force symmetry? So we're only allowing our frameworks to move symmetrically. So, so let's just again recall these sort of things that we're talking about. So again, periodic frameworks, and as Lewis sort of discussed, there's a dictionary between so sort of a periodic framework. I have an associated Z2 color graph. If I have a rotationally symmetric framework, there's a graph colored by Z mod KZ, and for crystal frameworks, you're coloring the graph with these crystallographic groups. So let's just look again at how I do this. So this is a periodic example. So here we have a nice framework with periodic symmetry, and so we pick some, so here we have some obvious vertex representatives that we pick, and this tells us how we're going to color our quotient graph. So all these edges are connecting a representative with some other representative, so it gets a zero color. This edge here is connecting this representative with the translated this guy, so I think that's this guy here, so we get a one. I think the colors are wrong, but okay. So I think this is 0, 1, and 1, 0. But anyway, as before, so you know, this edge connects this representative with the translate of this representative, so again, it gets colored by some Z2 group elements. Here we have a framework with degree 3 rotational symmetry, and so if we say pick, so if we pick this, these set of vertices as representatives, and we sort of look in the quotient graph, then all these edges again are connecting our chosen representatives, and these two edges here are connecting a representative in some image and another one, so we get these colors here and here. Okay. So what's the goal of this talk? Well, as I said, I really want to prove, well, okay, prove in quotes, give a proof sketch of the Lamon direction for these, for our theorems for generic rigidity and the periodic rotational and crystal frameworks. So I'll probably only get through the first two if I'm lucky, and then at the end maybe I'll say something about the crystal frameworks. So as Lewis said, there's some sort of botanical collection of groups going on here. So the proofs are not going to be identical, but they all have the same basic strategy. So we're going to start with, well, I didn't actually put it up here. So as with basically every Lamon proof I've ever heard of, we're going to talk not about rigidity, but generic infinitesimal rigidity. And then the infinitesimal rigidity statement we're going to reduce to a statement about direction networks or parallel redrawing theorem. And this, so this method of reducing it to direction networks and parallel redrawing has showed up in other papers before, so I think Walter is the first one who had this idea and used it for regular Lamon, and then there's also a paper by Lewis and Ilyana, so they use this kind of method. So first we take the statement about infinitesimal rigidity, which is rather hard, we reduced it to a simpler, sort of more linear problem about direction networks. And then that problem we further reduced to a matroid representability problem, and then that's really the meat is proving that matroid representability statement. So let's just recall what the theorem is saying in the periodic case. So we have a, so if I have a periodic framework with this quotient graph that's colored, then the statement is for generic realizations, the G-twiddle, or the framework for G-twiddle is minimally rigid if and only if G is Clairaut. So Lewis talked about this in his talk a little bit. So yeah. Right, so let's just remember what colored Lemon is and maybe a little bit of the motivation there. So this is colored Lemon if we have n vertices, m equals 2n plus 1 edges, and again, why 2n plus 1 edges? Well, every motion can be determined by the n vertices, that's 2n degrees of freedom, and where the lattice goes, that describing the lattice is 4 degrees of freedom, and then you subtract off 3 for the trivial motions. And but then there's always these subgraph counts. And in the subgraph, remember, so we have m prime edges, n prime vertices, c prime coordinates, et cetera, et cetera. And but again, the idea was, so for any subgraph, again, we have 2n prime degrees of freedom from the points. R prime is the rank. Remember, that's sort of how much of the lattice that we see or interact with. So if we interact with rank R prime, then we have 2 R prime degrees of freedom from the lattice. And then from this term, and then what do? We pin down one component that's 3 degrees of freedom, so that's 3 out of here. And then the rest of the components each can move independently by translations. So here we have just a couple of colored Lemon graphs. Can someone tell me when I started? At 8 minutes ago. Okay. Okay. So so if I have my Z2 color graph, I assign some length to it. What is the meaning of a configuration? Well, so for each point, I put it in the plane. That's the PIs, and then I have a 2x2. So here the PIs are placements of vertex. So remember, in the quotient graph, we have one vertex for each orbit in the periodic framework. So the PIs are, I'm just picking where one representative in the orbit is going, and then the L is a 2x2 matrix, and this is specifying the lattice. So L is, say, two vectors two column vectors. The first column is one is the first lattice vector, and V2 is the second lattice vector. So if we translate what the a periodic realization of this framework is into this finite context, what you end up with is just for each edge. So for each edge, upstairs it's the this is the length of your edge upstairs, and you want this to be Lij squared. Okay, and as everybody does everywhere, so now you can differentiate. You can differentiate this function and get what does it mean to have an infinitesimal motion. So an infinitesimal motion is again, so we're just assigning motion vectors to each vertex, but now the lattice can change as well. So we also have an infinitesimal motion of the lattice, and that's what this m is. So if you just, I don't want to go through all the details, but if you just funk it out, the condition ends up being, well, these two vectors are perpendicular. Okay? So configuration is, so as usual, it's infinitesimally rigid if the only vectors that satisfy the system are ones coming from the trivial motions. Okay? And as usual, you can show infinitesimal rigidity is enough to imply rigidity. The goal is I want to take infinitesimal rigidity or generic infinitesimal rigidity and reduce it to a statement about direction networks. So what is a direction network? Well, instead of assigning lengths to every edge, I'm going to assign directions. Okay, so to each edge I'm going to assign some direction. And now a realization is a choice of points and a lattice where each edge points in direction dij. And another way of saying that is just the edge, since we're in two dimensions, every vector has a unique perpendicular. So saying that this edge points in the direction dij is the same as just saying it's perpendicular to its perpendicular. Okay, so we have, so the direction network system is just for each edge ij, this is zero. Now, so here's the sort of main trick. So suppose first I give you a direction network. So I give you all these directions, dij. And now we solve this direction network and I get some points P and the lattice L that satisfies this direction network. And let's further assume that it's faithful. So no edge is collapsed. Then what is the corresponding infinitesimal rigidity system for that configuration? So first we solve this direction network. So first we solve this system, and then we get some configuration that's faithful. Which is, so we get some configuration which is faithful. And now Now we have some configuration. We can ask if it's infinitesimally rigid. So what is that system? Well, as we said on the previous slide, it's this system of equations. So we're now the variables you're choosing are the V's and the M. Okay. But now what did we just enforce? We enforced that this was in the direction of Bij. So this system is the same as if I just put in Dij. So okay, so who cares? Well, the point is, obviously these systems look very similar, right? Here we have Dij perp and here we have Dij. So in fact, these systems have, as long as this is faithful, so we actually get the system, these are the same rank. Because any solution to this, I can just rotate in and get a solution to that. So actually the sets of solutions are related just by rotation. So what are we left to prove? Well, so now you just want to show that for generic directions, if I solve this and my graph is colored Lemon, then when I solve this direction network, I get a unique faithful realization up to translation and scaling. Okay, so how do I do that? Alright, so we've done step one, we reduced generic rigidity to some generic direction network statement. So now our next step is we want to reduce this to some statement about matroid representability. Okay. So we say G is color 2-2 if it has n vertices and m equals to n plus 2 edges, and for every subgraph we have this subgraph count. Now, so where does this come from? Well, so if I'm solving now we have a direction network, and again, for every subgraph, I have it's equations should be less than the number of variables minus trivial. Now here, instead of trivial motions, it's equations is less than equal to the number of variables minus trivial solutions. So for each, the number of variables is again 2n prime. This is from the points. This is from the lattice. And now, what is a trivial solution? Well, if we go back to here, right? I'm not requiring that this edge actually be non-zero. So there's always the trivial solution where I just put all the points on top of each other. And so there's always, and if I have different components, I can collapse each component independently, and I have two trivial solutions for each component. So that's why I have this minus 2c prime. So what's the relation? So the relation between colored Lemon and colored 2-2, well, so it's just a combinatorial statement. If I have a colored Lemon graph and I just double any edge, it's automatically colored 2-2. And in fact, you can see this count is exactly, the count for 2-2 is exactly, allows exactly one more edge per subgraph. So now we want to reduce our theorem to this statement that for generic direction networks, the graph has only so now we have this theorem. We show that generic rigidity is equivalent to proving this. Now I prove that that's the same as proving that for color 2-2 graphs, actually the only solution is the collapsed one. Okay, so here's how we do so. Well, so here, we're assuming now G is colored Lemon. And so now I just double any old edge, and I pick some generic directions. So if I know that, if I know this lemma that generic directions, for generic directions the graph has only collapsed solutions, blah, blah, blah. So what is this saying? This is saying that for color 2-2 graphs, the generic rank of the direction network is the same as the number of edges. So I pick generic directions D. If I double an edge, I know by the previous lemma that the rank had to increase by at least one. So I have, suppose, make some diagram of G. So we have some IJ, and then we're going to double it. So I want to show that in any realization, this edge isn't collapsed. Okay? And, well, suppose that in any realization, it wasn't, I and J were on top of each other. Okay, so suppose, you know, all realizations look like this, and then there's some other stuff. I don't know what it looks like. But if every realization looks like this, then if I double this edge, well, how could the rank possibly increase, right? I and J are already on top of each other. So no matter which new direction I assign to this edge, you know, whatever direction I enforce between I and J, it's already satisfied because they're collapsed. So there's no way, so if it was always collapsed, there's no way the rank would increase. But we know it had to. So, in fact, IJ is not collapsed in some realization. But that argument works for any edge. I mean, there's nothing special about this edge as opposed to any other. So really, in every solution, every edge is not collapsed. Okay, so let's go back to this lemma. So now I just want to prove this lemma that if this is color 2-2, then I only have collapsed solutions. Okay, so I'm almost out of time here. So 5 minutes. Okay, so then I'll just give sort of the executive summary. So all right, so this is the rough explanation. So every color 2-2 graph, you use some sort of matroidal theory, including Edmonds matroid union theorem, and we show that it decomposes as something we call colored 1-1 graphs. And these guys, the colored 1-1 graphs, are really simple. It's just So a colored 1-1 graph is just a tree with two additional edges, and with those cycles, you get from the two extra edges, you get all the rank of Z2, and then you just assign a direction. Well, it's better with a picture. So then you just assign direction to each of those trees, and you show that you get a collapsed solution. So here are some examples of colored 1-1 graphs. So just you have a tree, you have two extra edges, and then among these cycles, you there are at least two which, when you go around them, pick up independent Z2 directions. Okay, so we can decompose. So this is a colored 2-2 graph, and we have this decomposition. There's these two sub-colored 1-1 graphs. Okay, and now let's see what happens. So now I'm going to assign, say, two different directions to each. I'm just going to assign a direction to each of these graphs. I'm just going to, for instance, assign the up direction to every one of these edges and some other different direction to each one of these edges. So maybe up and, you know, diagonal. Okay, so let's see what happens when I do that. So this is one of my colored 1-1 graphs, and I'm going to assign the up direction to each of these edges. So now when I realize this direction at Merkle, well, what can I do? So I put 1 somewhere, and now this is uncolored, so the representative 2 just has to be above 1. And then, okay, you look here, so this is uncolored, so the representative 3 has to be, you know, vertical with 1 again, and then you just percolate. So, but 4 has to be now above 3, so 4 is in this line too. And so at this point, I've drawn some realization for these three edges here, and now this edge here is also, I've also assigned the up direction. So now, but this is colored, so this, so in the realization, this vertex is, doesn't connect with 1, but some other representative of 1. So 1 translated by Z2, so this is the, it's not 1, but it's, image under the action of the Z2 vector 4, 1. Okay? And same for here, we get some, so this color means that the representative for 3 is connected to not the representative of 1, but some translate. But now, so now all my points obviously have to be placed vertically with respect to each other. But now this 0, 2 and 4, 1 are independent. So that means, in fact, the lattice vector is also, the lattice vectors also have to be vertical, because this difference has to be vertical and that difference has to be vertical. And because it's independent, that actually enforces the entire lattice to be vertical. So if we look at the entire realization of, so if we actually look at the entire realization of the periodic framework, every point is just sitting in some vertical line. Okay. But now I had not just one color 1-1 graph, but 2 of them, and they were on the same set of vertices. So the first colored 1-1 graph forces it to the realization to be vertical. The other one, say, forces it to be in this direction. But since all the vertices are all the same, they have to collapse down to a point, because every point lies within 2 skew lines. Okay, so I think I'm out of time, but so for the rotationally symmetric guys, the story is basically the same. you you have these related graphs which are cone 2-2, and so again, via similar arguments, the theorem reduces to this lemma, which is that cone 2-2 guys have only collapsed solutions, and like you go through a similar sort of argument. Cone 2-2 guys decompose into two cone 1-1 guys, and you assign, you know, one direction to each component, but it's a little too much to go into here. But basically, it's a similar story. Okay. So you can prove, the cone case in a similar way, and then for the orientation preserving crystal symmetry, you take the result on cones for cone Lamont, and you can basically bootstrap it up to prove it for general crystallographic groups with only rotations. Okay. All right. Well, I'm out of time. But so the point is that right, so if you look at the rigidity matrix, right, in normal Lamont, if you have the rigidity matrix, it's hard to get a, so your entries are now you have what are PJ minus PI and PI minus PJ, but these PIs appear in various places in the matrix, so it's very hard to. So that makes it, in some sense, hard to get a handle on the rank of that matrix. Now, for the direction networks, you don't have that. You can assign, the matrix looks basically the same. You have, now, instead of PJ minus PI, you have some DIJ and minus DIJ. But now these I can choose arbitrarily. There's no relation between, there's no enforced relation between DIJ and some other direction. Yeah, basically. So one way of proving rigidity would say, here, I give you an example, and then you compute the rigidity matrix, and then it's done, right? But I don't know how to do that. So this is sort of a way to get an end, it's sort of an end run around having to give you exactly an explicit specialization. I just prove, well, there is some realization using these direction networks. And proving, okay.